Hello and welcome to Why We Move, the podcast from Do More Movement, hosted by me, Jeremy Johnston. Each episode, I'll be speaking to a mover and shaker from the health and fitness world and beyond. We'll find out why they move, what it gives them, both physically and mentally, who and what inspires them to move, and why they want you to move more. The aim is to encourage you to challenge your body and mind in new ways, to think differently about health and fitness, to try things you've never done before, and above all, to do more movement. Okay, Danny, welcome to Why We Move, and thank you very much for coming on. Let's get straight into it. You run, cycle, pogo, dance your way through life with a smile on your face. What does movement mean to you?
I think movement is just like, you know, it's what we're supposed to be doing. We have these kind of limbs and we can move our bodies. And so that's the natural thing. And but I mean, much, much more than that. For me personally, it's, I think, like, probably I need to look like go deep into running, really, which is the thing that's stayed with me since I could walk until, you know, the ripe old age of 42. And that's the thing that's been the one constant probably in my life, other than my family. And so, yeah, running has been the place where I've found friendship. It's been the place that I've found love. It's the thing that holds my family together, because we're all still runners. And, you know, this, the greater running community, the greater moving community, it's just unbelievable, because you share, I think in moving, you kind of share this experience that it feels sacred, doesn't it? And it kind of, you know, when you are moving your body, you kind of, you're more attuned with the earth, with yourself. It's like your therapy. It's the place you can go and find answers for things like the greater questions in life. And obviously, yeah, sharing that with other people is even better. And so, you know, yeah, it's kind of spiritual, it's physical, it makes you feel awesome. It is like the core thing in life, I think.
And how has your approach to, let's pick running, how has your approach to running changed since you were started as a youngster to your ripe old age of 42? How has your, I guess, your physical approach and your mental approach to running changed?
Well, I guess there's been ups and downs in all of the factors, but in terms of, when I was a kid, I just thought everyone did it, because my mum and dad did it. So I just, you know, it's just like you assume whatever you're going through in life is the same as everyone else's at that point. But, and then you soon learn that that's not the case. And then I think I started playing rugby fairly competitively, and running was just became a part of something you did to be better at rugby, I think, probably at that point in my life. And then I think it was into my 20s where I started like finding that I was pretty good at running, and started being competitive and going to races with the idea that you might win it. And so at that point, it's become a really, really competitive place. And then I cycled from London to India, and that was a real changing point. Like, movement became so much more. At that point, it became more than competing and trying to win and, you know, the general kind of feel good factors of sport. It became something a bit more spiritual. And then we kind of bring that back around to, well, since then, you know, in my 30s, it became something, a way of bringing people together and giving people the opportunities that I'd had as a kid and in my 20s and stuff. And then now I'm 42, and it's a combination of lockdown, a few other factors, that I've just got back into it again. And I'm probably training a lot more intelligently, and I'm just loving it with all my soul. I'm back up in Sheffield, so I've come back up to the Peak District. So the runs I'm doing are just so much more, you know, perfect for me as a human. You get to the big expanses of green and horizons and all that sort of stuff, rather than running in London where I was before. So the running has become much, much more enjoyable. And now, in October, I ran a PB for my marathon. I ran a PB for my 10K on Monday, actually. And I've been running PBs for 5K. So it's just like, oh, wow, I'm like the fittest I've ever been. And without taking it as too seriously, I'm just really, really loving it with all my heart and soul.
And I was about to say, do you It sounds like you're, for the want of a better word, I'm going to make one up, your funometer of running. Kind of, was it lower when you were being more competitive, when you were seeing it as a tool to improve rugby, and maybe in your 20s when it was more competitive? Did you enjoy it as much as you are now, as much as you did in your 30s?
I mean, the funometer has probably a whole load of different levels. And when I was in my teens, I'd go running with my dad and I'd be running alongside him. That's such a cool thing to be doing. And it was at that time that I started to realize that that's not something all kids are doing with their dads, and how privileged I was to be able to do that with him and my mum. And so that wasn't as fun, but there were still elements of, you know, wow, this is cool to it. And then I think when I was really competitive, I had such a great core of mates. We would just see each other every single, you know, half girls, half guys. And it was just such a brilliant kind of education in life of sharing this love. And we'd go on trips together. We'd hire out cottages out in the Alps or wherever. And we'd just go cycling, or we'd go running, or whatever it was around there. And so definitely that was also enjoyable. But definitely it's more kind of spiritual now. I think it just feels as though I'm on the path that I'm supposed to be on. And, you know, if you try and get off the path, you get battered back into it, don't you? Whereas before I was just in the middle of the jungle, just like fighting my way through life. And now I feel like I'm in this kind of, it's a lot to do with where I live. I'm just in the zone, and it's the whole universe is propelling me forward. And that's probably why I'm getting these PBs, you know, because it's not just my own strength that's pushing me forward, it's the strength of the universe, if that's not too weird a thing to talk about.
Sorry, we love the woo-woo here, it's all good. And how much do you think, I mean, you've touched on it there, do you think the running in nature is a part of that? Because we had on series one, had Simon Jones, who's a trail running guide and runs trail run retreats in the Alps and Chilterns and things like that, and he was very much done ultra marathons and all this sort of thing, and very much that the nature is just a huge part of that and doesn't get the same effect spiritually as running in London or cityscapes. How does that compare for you?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think if you're running, I love this kind of analogy. Someone told me about, if you are kind of focusing on the thing in front of you, historically, thousands of years ago, the only time you really focused on one point is if there was a saber-toothed tiger looking to tear your head off. So, you know, there's a natural, by focusing on something straight ahead of you, there's this kind of natural cortisol stress reaction to your body. And so, you know, when you're in the cities, you have to look directly at things because you're trying to avoid people, you're trying to avoid a building or a sign or whatever. And then if you compare that to being in nature and up on Stanage Edge and leaping from stone to stone, like splashing through the mud with these huge views and, you know, huge hills, vistas ahead of you, that's just, your vision is just so expanded, and you're looking kind of all around rather than at the one specific thing. And if you look back those thousands of years ago, the times you were able to do that was when you were feeling safe, because you didn't have to focus on the thing that was around you. And I also think, you know, I just think you get somewhere that's green or somewhere where there's water. And as a animal that we all are, like, green means food. Water means, probably also means food and drink and everything. And so I just think I don't know this stuff. I'm just kind of spouting rubbish to you, giving you more woo-woo, like in your, and I just for anyone who's listening, Jeremy's wearing this cardigan that looks so woo-woo. It's so many bright colors. It's all woo-woo and big and bushy. But anyway, yeah, that's probably what's encouraging me to go like this. But, you know, when you're out in these green and wet places, you're maybe there's this some reptilian brain that's saying, okay, we're going to be able to get food, and you can be more relaxed and you can relax into the run. But yes, I agree. Basically, short answer is yes, I agree.
do you think that in our kind of modern, complicated, analytical, Instagram filtered lives, we sometimes overcomplicate the running in nature? We sometimes overcomplicate what those feelings are that we can't necessarily put our finger on.
and that there is something sort of caveman evolutionary about it that we haven't quite worked out the science of how to define and measure and talk about, but actually we feel it when we're in those environments.
Yeah, I reckon so. It'd be cool if you did start being able to measure it. That would be amazing. And I think, I mean, even just lockdown, people have been moving out of London just because of lockdown, and then people have been deciding to stay because they just feel better for it. And obviously that's going to change again, because there is, like, you know, cities offer greatness, like so much opportunity, infinite number of people to meet, loads of cool things to get involved in. But I think that there's definitely a kind of a slight shift at the moment. It might go back, but a shift to, wow, it's really nice to feel calm and kind of like a tranquil. I kind of compare it to being like a tranquil lake rather than a stormy sea, which, you know, both of those are cool, but I'm just, you know, I'm more geared towards the tranquil lake at this point in my life.
And obviously a lot of the work that you're known for, the Project Awesome and the sort of encouraging groups to get more active and move and run and things like that, some of that has, I guess, had to be parked over the last 12 months to a certain extent. And how have you found running on your own, I imagine, much more in the last 12 months than, say, the previous 2 or 3 years?
There's a twofold to this answer, really, because we have always wanted to do something that unites the world. And in December of last year, mid-lockdown, we organized One Run Global, which is a kind of a global relay, virtual relay, where people ran at 7 p.m. at their local time and passed the baton to the next time zone. And then they ran for an hour and then they passed the baton to the next time zone. And that was amazing. We had got people from every single country in the world, North Korea, Sudan, Chad, all these crazy places. And So every country in the world was represented, and we had 15,000 people take part. And that was just bloody amazing to do something. I do miss it. Of course, I would much prefer to be part of 100 people that were taking part in that event rather than doing my own small thing with it. But I had trips to run across Iceland and trips to run across the Pamir Highway and things like this. And they've all obviously been postponed, but hopefully they're still going to happen and we're still going to get these. You know, it's looking almost certainly now this year that these things are going to happen, which is amazing, really, really good. And we're going to run that One Run again anyway. We're going to do it virtual, but maybe there's going to be a few more people meeting up and things like this. So yes, I have missed it, but I've also been really fortunate with the people. I live with two of my best mates up here, and so we have had that amount of social interaction. And I love it anyway, running past someone and just saying hi, and just that little moment between you is something kind of nice and special. I do that in London or in up here or whatever. So, you know, I guess that's, you know, the only times we've been able to get kind of social interaction a little bit. I mean, I love going down, there's a pond, I call it a pond, but you might call it a lake or something, in the middle of Sheffield, which is probably the least pleasant place to go and outdoor swim when it's cold. But it's the most likely place you're going to have people walk past and have a little conversation with you, or have other swimmers turn up and swim with you, you know, swim different parts of the lake, still keeping the distance and everything. And so I really love going there just simply because of that interaction you get with people.
Was this where you were with your sledgehammer a few weeks ago on Instagram?
I have taken my sledgehammer down there, but it didn't really need the sledgehammer. That was more for the photo opportunity. But the one out in the peaks where I was able to climb on the ice and lie on the ice, and the sledgehammer wasn't breaking the ice, that was some seriously cold water we're swimming in.
Talking about the, just referencing, I guess, the Great Norse Run, your sort of 10-day multi, so I think it's 25 miles a day or so across Iceland. When you do, not necessarily that specific thing, but when you take people out into those environments and put them through challenges that they've never done before, or that they're not sure that they can get through, what do you get out of that? How does that set your fire? How does the running in this instant play into that versus the mental side of it?
I guess this is something we didn't talk about when we talk about what I get out of moving, and that is this kind of bar setting in terms of what you can achieve in life. And you do it, yes, you do it physically, but then you can translate that into all the other parts of your life. And I think, you know, it's just amazing to see these people. Like, we had people sign up for Iceland in obviously 2019 was the last time we did it, and they hadn't run more than a half marathon before, and they've signed up for something that's a marathon a day, basically, for 9 days straight. And some of those are ultra marathons as well. And it is just such an amazing thing to see another human being walk up to the barrier they've set themselves in life. And that, you know, in this sense, it is a half marathon, or, you know, a distance. And they kind of, you know, you can almost feel them slow as they come to that barrier, and then they just step past it. And it's just, you know, it's a made up fictional thing. They walk past it, and you just see that the pupils of their eyes kind of grow in, like, oh, realization. And then they push on and they do another half marathon. That's on the first day, and they run a marathon and, you know, achieve something that they potentially thought they weren't capable of. Just that first day is just absolutely miraculous in itself. And then they just keep doing it over the period of time that we're doing it. We make it very as easy as we possibly can do it. We break it into 3 segments per day normally, and if it's a really long one, we will break it into 4 segments. And so it's very, very doable by everyone, as long as you have as long as your body's healthy and capable. I think, you know, it's probably something most people could go and do. But the really cool part of it is when you get the messages when they get home, and they're like, we've talked about their physical barriers and stepping past their barriers in their physical life. But then you come home and they start looking at their relationships, their work, the barriers they put in, because we put barriers all over. We're like, oh, I can't play the clarinet or whatever it is. You know, look, it's not, music's not for me. And you're like, every single thing that everyone has put in their life, little kind of barrier, becomes a little bit more questionable. And I love that in terms of, yes, especially in terms of work and relationships. Like, it's really, really tangible what you can give to these things you're part of, and you get a very different response when you do pass these barriers. And that's just, how cool is that? You're just transforming someone's life. What you're doing is opening the door to the room that they thought, it's like the Truman Show. It's like you're living within this confined area, and then suddenly you're like, well, there's a door here, there's a door here, there's a door here, and a door here. Feel free to go out whenever you want to. And I think, just like a caged animal in a zoo, if you open the door, it takes a little while for them to have the confidence to step through that, and potentially they need a little bit of encouragement. And then, you know, they might even return to that box afterwards, and just like, this is my safe spot, I'll stay here. But then they'll venture out again, and then slowly they start realizing, oh, this is my new arena that I'm allowed to play in, be in, live in, whatever. And then I think it's up to them, up to the other people around them. Maybe it's up to me again to show them that there's doors to that world as well, and that there's greater, more wonderful things even outside of that. And so, you know, I think that answers your question of, like, it's just amazing. It really is. It's like giving a little kind of twinkle of life to people, and that is, well, what's better than that, really?
And do you, when people are signing up, how much conversation is there before about the battle that they're going to face, whether it's physical or mental, and how they should prepare for that?
Yeah, I guess we definitely give a kind of an idea of what they should be trying to build up to, what they should be doing. There's a few conversations with certain people, like, just, you know, just saying, I believe in you. And maybe not for the people that took part, but, you know, for people, that's a rare thing sometimes to hear those words. And so that can translate, you know, into their being straight away. But and we can advise people to do certain bits of training and whatever else. But I remember the night before Iceland, the night before we set off to the north of Iceland on the bus to start setting off with the run, all the guys that signed up, a good number of the guys, they'd found this bar, where they'd been told that if you sing karaoke, you get free beer. And if you've been to Iceland, you know, beer is expensive. And they sang karaoke all night and got absolutely hammered. But in addition to this, they're like, oh, yeah, we didn't really manage to up our training at all. So we'll just see how things go. So the humans are amazing. We are capable of, you know, infinitely more than we believe we can do. And I think that's true for every single human, not just a certain few. I think we're all capable of more than we imagine.
On that sort of link to that, when you've done the sort of SAS challenges and Ultimate Hell Week and some of those situations, do you think about the physical nature of what you're being asked to do, or do you only think about the mental side of it? So when you're being given a backpack of 50 kilograms or whatever it is and going on a 10K march and then coming back and do it all again three more times or whatever, do you think about, I know I can run 10K, I know I can carry 50, or do you just stay in your head and work through it, the challenge mentally?
Yeah, I think I'm very much in the present. Don't really think, it's just, this is what's happening right now. And I think that really is a super tool to have, to be like that. It's like, okay, and I've had self-belief in what I'm capable of. But also, I think one of the things that makes me a kind of a formidable competitor is that I don't actually mind failing or losing. So I'll just give everything I've got, and that's all I can do, basically. And so, yeah, in that scenario with the SAS, they're just like, this is what you got to do. You think you're finished, they make you do it again. They make you think it's finished, mate, they do it again. And then they make you do a bazillion burpees or whatever at the end of it, just to really finish you off. And it was just like, oh, okay, I'll just do it. It's a strange thing. I think we were like, a load of us are all very fearful about, I don't know what it is really. I guess because people contact me and they're like, well, I've got all this organized, that we've got a specific example is a bunch of ladies, actually, we met up this is a few years ago, but they made me sit down and said, we've organized this route across Hadrian's Wall, we've got all the places we could stay, we've broken all the mileage, we've got the route all sorted, we know how to get there on the trains, we know how to get back, but we just don't know how to make it happen. And I was like, you've done everything. Every single thing was planned. All you need to do is
get on the train.
Get on the train. That's exactly it. And start saying, I'm doing it. And then that's it. So, and I think, you know, a lot of people have that. We're like, oh, what is the secret ingredient I'm missing? And there is no secret ingredient. It's just bloody go and do it.
And do you have an ego when you're doing those things and you're competing? Is there an element of you that is, I want to beat the person next door to me, or I want to prove that I'm the best or that I'm the number one? Or is it all just external kind of comparisons just don't come into it? Because you say you've competed at a kind of relatively high level in triathlon and running and things like that in a previous life. So there's obviously a competitive element there. But when you were in that stage of your training and your life, were you externally competitive, internally competitive? Has that changed?
I don't think it's ever really been any different. It's just been the same the whole time. And I'm really, really, really competitive. If we were having a face-to-face meal right now and you just said to me, I dare you to put that whole big bulbous beetroot in your mouth and try and eat it, I would just do it just for the, but it's not really for competitive reason. It's just because it's silly and it's fun. And I think with triathlon, running, whatever else I've been up to, it's always been I love pushing myself. And I think, you know, the endorphins you get from that, I'm probably a little bit addicted to those sorts of feelings. But I'll come back to something else actually about this kind of purity of it. But I'm really competitive, but I don't mind if I win. If I win or lose, it's just, I'll try my very hardest to beat you. And if you beat me, I'll still wrap my arms around you at the end and give you a hug and say, that's awesome, well done. And it almost makes no odds. And I can take as much pleasure from your gains as I can from my own. And that's another kind of strong thing. But if I just revert back to that kind of endorphin type thing, I mean, I love the cold water swimming when it's icy, you just get in there and freeze yourself. And I love pushing myself on I go as hard as I possibly can in running to try and get a time and things like this. But they're not, I don't think it's actually to do with anything to do with any of that. It's just when you're in the, you're so focused on what you're doing at that moment. I feel like it's my meditation, especially the swimming. And you can't think of anything other than, oh my God, every single muscle in my body is being crushed by this freezing cold water. And you're so close to, you're taking steps closer to death, like probably 30 minutes from death, or, yeah, or very, very severe damage to your body in those scenarios. And I always think, like, the closer to death you are, the more you appreciate the life around that. And, you know, we get out and we have a hot chocolate and we have a croissant or, you know, whatever it is that we're doing, and conversation afterwards as well. So everything is just slightly heightened on what it would be. And that's the same as after a race. And it's that focus, it's like meditation, and it's just probably my own meditation that I choose to do.
And that competitive element where you said, you don't sort of, you know, it sounds like the thrill is in the chase of the time, not necessarily the time itself, but the thrill of the pain, the achievement, the sacrifice that you have to get that time. And the time is merely a marker rather than the achievement itself.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, you know, my PB for 10K is just over 37 minutes. I did that on Monday. Literally, that means nothing in terms of the grand scheme of things. I'd have to knock a minute off per mile to be a half decent runner, and that time it's nothing. It really is. It's just like, oh, I've managed to push my body a little bit harder than I have done before.
The challenges you've done, cycling to India, pogoing across Togo, the SAS, things like that, the obviously lots of running. Is there one that stands out that you would never do again? that you kind of finished and were like often you do these things where you finish and you're like, well, I'm not sure if I enjoyed that, but I'm glad I did it. So I did the David Goggins 4x4x48 last weekend, which was brilliant. And lots of people have been like, oh, you know, did you enjoy it? I was like, well, I kind of enjoyed it. I enjoyed aspects of it. There were some amazing sort of runs at 4 a.m, stars were out. And I was pretty pleased when I finished it. I would maybe do it again. I'm not sure. Maybe try and find something else. But is there one of those things that you've done where you've just like, I'm pleased it's over. I'm not sure I really enjoyed it, and I wouldn't want to do it again. It was just not quite right. Didn't give you the thrill that maybe you thought it might.
I think the simple answer is no. I loved the things like this, the adventures where you go away and you're just meeting new people and you're doing cool stuff. There is 99% of that I absolutely loved. There were probably, you know, slight moments where trucks are running you off the road and stuff like this where I was like, oh goodness, this is a bit rubbish. But mostly I was just loving it. And I do really like to say to people, like, adventure has been something that I've loved, but it doesn't mean to say this because it'd be something that everyone loves. And I would hate for people to chase the idea of what I've been doing. And people have done it and they've gone off on these big adventures and they absolutely hate it. Because they see, you know, like I definitely, you know, there's these micro moments of success that have kind of led from that. And people want those micro moments of success. And they think they have to do the adventure to get those. And I think, you know, there's a bazillion different things in the world you can do. And the adventure is just one of them. And running is just one of them. And whether it's art, music, dance, you know, all those sorts of things, they all offer the same kind of thing, same kind of concepts around it. But I think after Hell Week, just for anyone who doesn't know what it is, we were on a BBC TV show where for 12 days we had six different special forces came in and tried to break us emotionally, physically, or emotionally or physically, and that at the end of that I was a broken man physically. But the thing was, it was so hard. Like, what you saw on the telly was like maximum of 10% of what we went through, because obviously, you know, you've seen people do a lot of push-ups. That's enough. You don't need to see all the rest that they've
done. Not award-winning television.
Yeah, like not award-winning television. Yeah. And that was just continuous. And so, but that that show, what we went through was so, so physically hard, without sleep, without food, all these sorts of things, that everything else kind of paled. Like, right, doing a normal race was just like, what's the point in this? It's just like, there's nothing. And so, and that's the case for a lot of us, actually, and who took part. And we actually had these periods where we went, just didn't really do it, probably kept a few things ticking along, but we definitely lost a lot of fitness, a lot of strength, because couldn't really be bothered anymore. And but, you know, maybe that was partly because our souls had been crushed a little bit by these things. I mean, that's what the whole concept is, isn't it? It's like, let's break them, and they will, you will be broken. And going back to your ego point, it's kind of the people with egos went on the first day because they were getting broken, and that so much of who they were was represented by their ability not to be broken. And so when they were broken, it's like they just fell to pieces. Whereas I think the people that definitely the top five that got through to the end are the people with we've all got egos, but it was a different version of that. Whereas we were just like, this is a brilliant experience. Who else gets to train with like the Russian, the US, the UK, Aussie special forces units? I'm like, what a privilege that was. And that was, you know, that type of mentality is the kind of thing that keeps you going, really. But yes, definitely. But again, now I feel like I'm a different human being to when I went onto that show. So I'd almost want to do it again now, just to test. I'm ready to be tested again, but it's taken a good number of years. It's probably about 6 or 7 years since I was on it to recover. In fact, I think it might be more. That might be actually 10 years or so.
You still feel the effects of it, in a sense, maybe not physically now, but mentally and emotionally, it's still such a massive reference point for everything you do.
Yeah, I think so. I think that definitely is lessening. And the greatest thing to come out of that show are the friendships. And we, you know, because no one understands what we went through apart from the people. It's the same as when you're in any sort of very, very hard ships, basically. And whether that's climbing Everest or whether it's being in the actual SAS and really, really suffering. But I've been to probably 5 weddings from there, and I would class the 4 or 5 of them as my 5 of my best mates in the world. And that was all built over 12 days of suffering. And not the most ideal way to make friends, but it seems that that is some way to bring people together. So that's the big lasting thing from that is the friendships, and that's cool, isn't it?
That's great. How do you pick yourself up on days where maybe it's raining outside, you've not slept well, you've just had a shitty email come through or whatever it is, and you need to go on a run, you need to go on a swim and things like that, but you're not quite in the mood? Are you pretty regimented and you just do it? Or do you give yourself days off and say, actually, today is not the day, I'm going to just be a bit gentler with myself and we'll pick it up tomorrow?
I'm very much the latter. I'm not a kind of rigid. I mean, I had a coach maybe 15 years ago when I was at my kind of what I thought was my peak, which is actually wrong. When I had that coach, I lasted about a week. I just didn't like being told that I had to do this. I like to be a little bit more free flowing, like water through life. And but yeah, I know that going out there and going for a run or going for a swim is going to make me feel better. That's for sure. And that's, you know, that's built in. So there is, I would use that. But if I literally am feeling tired, crap, my body's really, really tired, I just have a rest day. It's not, it's definitely not something that is, you know, a bit like, you know, I dabble in a play in the piano or the ukulele and do a bit of drawing and stuff like this. And maybe that's what I want to do that day or whatever it is. And they're not the same for me. Then for me, they're not the same. Yeah, it's definitely, I just want to enjoy life, and I don't want to go out and hate a run. That's just not my bag.
And have you got better at that as you've got older? did you used to kind of run for the sake of it at times, or has it always been just for the joy of it?
Yeah, I think there's times in my 20s I would go out on a Friday night and or Saturday.
It's always
night.
The Friday night.
Yeah, get absolutely. And then I just wake up in the morning and be like, I'm gonna put myself through it today. And then, you know, the unfortunateness of that is you probably push yourself too hard in the weakened state and you end up getting a cold or something, and then you're out for a few days anyway. But what I think something to talk about here is making sure you've got those people around you who can pick you up in those situations. And I don't really like going for it. I much prefer to go for a run with other people. I like to have that community around me. I'm not one of these solo runners. So, you know, I love the fact that I've got these people around me that all want to do the same thing as I will do. And it might be that I'm having a crap day and I've had that rubbish email through, but I'll get a text message just saying, fancy popping out. Run to plunge is our kind of easy get out, where we run along the river, we jump in, and then we run back again. And so I might get messages like that, and that I know to say yes to that rather than no to that.
So the community that you've built over the years, is that the biggest takeaway? The biggest takeaway from your kind of movement and what movement and moving has given you over the years?
I think it's twofold. That is so important. And I love the fact that I'm privileged now enough to be in a position where I can build these communities very varying, from radically inclusive to kind of slightly strange, to give other, you know, people an opportunity to be part of a community. But and I think that you've got to look at it in terms of how healthy you are and how the latter half of your life is going to be infinitely better for what you've put into it so far. My mum, she's 69, and she's still out there running. We're going to run the marathon together in October, London Marathon. And how cool is it to be 69 and still going out and running marathons, and actually not just running them, competing at them? She's a whole nother story of someone that just loves running, but she loves the outdoors, and she'll stop and look at a butterfly. She'll look and pick berries for a while rather than, you know, taking it really seriously. But because of that, she's just maintained it. And she's, you know, she probably beat most of my schoolmates at a run. At 69 years old. That's cool, isn't it?
It's got to be the aim. Well, I think that covers everything I wanted to talk about. So thank you very much, Danny. Thank you very much for your time. Happy running this weekend and into the rest of the year.
Hi, superstar Jeremy. And like, just in case people are interested and want to know more, I think the best thing is just to go to dannybent.com, and you can find everything we talked about, from Project Awesome to running across Iceland to running Pamir, trekking up Mount Makalu, and everything else. And you know, my socials are all on there as well. So.
I hope you enjoyed that episode of Why We Move. As always, thanks again to our guest. Hopefully you found their story inspiring and it's left you with a desire to get up and out and to move your body. Check out the show notes for links to our guests and their recommendations. If you liked what you heard, then please do subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or via whoever your chosen provider is. Please do leave a review and share with your friends and family. Peace and good vibes, and until next time, whatever you do, do more movement.